You are listening to Pastor Talk.
They're trying to hit a target that they never drew. And what I mean is they just have this nebulous idea of, I want a healthy staff. Well, what happens is if you don't define what that is, then it's like what's happening is you're shooting and then later you're determining whether or not you hit the target. So here's what we say at The Bridge. And let me just encourage every pastor or church leader who listens to this. What we say at The Bridge is that the culture we create is more important than the vision that we cast.
Welcome to Pastor Talk, the podcast of Lifeway Pastors, giving you the tools and encouragement you need to shepherd your flock well. I'm your host, Marty Duren.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining Pastor Talk. This is Marty Duren, and I am joined in studio today by two amazing people. Josh Howerton.
Woo!
And Matt Wobeda.
Mm.
I got it right, didn't I?
That's pretty close.
Is it just a straight W?
You made it sound like a Z, like Zwobeda. You know,
that's because Swobeda. I'm good.
Like Swobeda.
Swo, just the soft S.
And then smooth like butter.
Butter.
See, Swobeda.
Oh, this is
I've never
be
heard
ridiculous.
That. And it's probably
you
good
probably shouldn't,
that I've never
yeah.
heard that before. Josh and Matt are both on staff at The Bridge Church
yep.
in Spring Hill, Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
Between 35 minutes and 3 hours south of Nashville, depending
yes.
upon traffic.
Yes.
Josh is lead pastor. You use lead pastor, correct?
Yes.
Matt is yep. the super duper executive pastor.
That's his official title.
Yeah.
That's actually on his business card. The Bridge Church is a great church. I've visited there several times.
Yes.
And
it was so good he left.
It was so good. I actually moved to the other side of town when
so
I
good
decided
he chose
for
another
a place
church.
To live. Yeah.
He had to get away.
I stayed with Matt when I came to Nashville to first start at Lifeway, mm-hmm. and then when I found a place to live, it was as far away from him as I could find.
Which was understandable.
Is mm-hmm. understandable.
Whatever.
So, Josh, you did not found the church.
Nope.
Your dad did.
That's
is that
correct.
Right?
That's yeah. correct. Yeah,
so,
I always say my dad did the part I never could have done, and then dad says that we're doing the part he never could have done.
Okay.
So yeah, short history there is dad did the hardest type of church plant you can do, parachuted into a town, rubbed two sticks together, and he pastored a church for the first 3 years.
Okay.
Dad is a priestly kind of guy, weep with those who weep. Mm-hmm. So whenever the core team of the church was larger than sort of dad could know personally,
mm-hmm.
Dad was like, man, you know, and he stepped away to devote himself full time to, he was a national small groups consultant for Lifeway.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that's when I came. And when Dad stepped away, you know, it's a great, great church plant. And then we've been there for coming up on 10 years.
And Spring Hill has increased in size a mite since he planted.
A mite. Yeah. It has. Yeah.
Yeah. When it was in the year 2000, Spring Hill was only 7,000 people. Now it's right about 40. And
wow.
he planted in 2003.
Yes.
Something like that? Yeah.
2004. Yep.
Okay, 2004.
Wow.
So it was still.
That's
yeah,
amazing. So you're married and have a couple of youngins?
I am. Yep. Jana, m'lady. We've been married coming up on 12 years. We have two daughters, both adopted. And we just announced this Sunday that we are adopting again.
Oh, I didn't Boom. Know that. I missed
Number
that.
Three.
Boom. We need that boy. So, and that's a great thing about adoption. You can special order one. So,
now,
boy.
was one of your adoptions hey, we might be telling y'all something different tomorrow. And then you announced an adoption. Was one of them like really fast?
They were, yeah, we had, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah,
okay.
Felicity went really fast.
And Jana's name is not actually Jana Milady. It's Jana Howerton, for
that's
those
correct.
Of you who are
Or Jana Montana,
close.
Jana Banana, either way.
Or you can just call both of them Jowerton.
And
yes.
Matt Swoboda.
That was perfect.
Is
well
a native of Nebraska, where the wind never stops blowing. And
yep.
he is the oldest. You just turned 30.
Right? I did, dude, last week.
Woohoo!
I can just officially say when someone asks how old I am, I'm in my 30s.
Wow.
I don't have to.
And if you know Matt, you know when he was born, they gave him a theology book to keep in his crib.
Mm-hmm.
And he had read more theology books by the time he was 25 than most theology professors still have read in their lifetimes.
And then I stopped.
Truth. Truth. Untruth.
And became a Nebraska fan. So you have a family?
Yes, I have two boys, 9 and 6, Caleb and Calvin. You probably guess where that came from.
I have no idea.
And then we are also adopting right now. Yes, a little girl, just like old Joshua said.
Mm.
We knew we were ready for a girl, so we're adopting a little girl from India, and we should be able to go get her in July-ish.
Hey, awesome.
So
Very good.
Need that court system to work.
Very good. That's right. Okay, so we are, I wanted to have you guys on. You're going to be on two episodes. This episode, we were talking about creating a healthy staff environment. Yep. And one of the reasons I wanted to have you guys on is because over the course of time that I've known y'all, which is, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 years now, mm-hmm. I guess, your staff has actually grown as your church has grown. Mm-hmm. Possibly when I first met y'all, Josh, you were the lead pastor. You were not the executive pastor, I don't think.
No,
you were just on staff.
No. Yep.
And then
we had Craig?
Three full-time
staff members. Craig McCown.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now you have
32.
Right at 30. Yeah. 30.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's been a huge amount of growth, mm-hmm. a lot of juggling around. You guys have grown. Talk about creating a healthy staff environment. Some of our listeners will have 5 or 8. Some of ours will have 2.
Yeah. Well, let me just say, I think it's arguably the most important thing that you can focus on. Your church, in our experience, is always going to be a reflection of its leadership, and everything trickles down from mm-hmm. leadership. So we felt like early on, we just identified the highest return on investment of our focus of anything that we do is building an amazing team mm-hmm. and protecting that team.
Yep.
So I'll just start by saying it's probably the most important thing that from a human perspective that you can do.
Josh, you should tell a little bit of how you instilled that from day one. So Josh was here mm-hmm. 2 or 3 years at the Bridge, and then Craig got hired in February of 2011. Then I came July of 2011.
Yep.
And Josh made dang sure that team dynamic was crazy healthy from yep. the beginning.
Okay, good.
So you want to just share a little bit about how you like made sure like that yeah. circle became what it was?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, it's the health of the team affects everything. Mm-hmm. If the team is healthy, you tend to make really good decisions. If the team is unhealthy, you tend to produce really bad decisions.
Right.
If the team is healthy, then the church tends to be healthy. If the team is unhealthy, church tends to be unhealthy. And just what I said earlier, the relational culture of the team is usually no. The relational culture of the team is always what the relational culture of the church is going to be like eventually. So yeah, when the Bridge got to that spot where we moved past me being the only full-time staff mm-hmm. member, and we brought two guys on that 1 year, Matt and Craig. That's the most important thing on my plate was the team being healthy. So this may sound really stupid, but we spent more time talking about your marriage and your hobbies than we did your job, you know, that first year.
Right.
We played practicing those hobbies. We played innumerable hours of ping pong.
Yes.
Those first few years. And I think a lot of people would go, oh, those are kids being kids. No. Mm-hmm. Looking back now, I would defend myself mm-hmm. and say, nope, that was strategic leadership. Mm-hmm. Because if we couldn't laugh together and share pains and be honest about what was going mm-hmm. on in our hearts and lives, then when we got into a meeting to make a decision,
right.
we were never going to be able to get to the best possible outcome mm-hmm. If we didn't have that sort of relational yep. oil to help the engine run.
Yeah, the love and trust that was built through that is what made us be able to walk into meetings and disagree with one another,
yeah.
but with in an agreeable way,
yeah,
and in
good.
A gracious way, and in a loving way. And we could say hard things to each other because we knew that person loves me and I trust them.
Yep. Well, but to be fair, Matt was 23, so he was a kid.
I was. Hey, all of us were in our 20s.
He was 23, I was 28, Craig was 29.
Yeah, that's right. We were all in our 20s.
So you guys have a, what do you call this list that you sent to me? Is this like your yeah. principles for good staff so relations?
Let me set this up real quick? So let me set this up. With staff culture and staff relationships, here's what I feel like happens to most people is they're trying to hit a target that they never drew.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And what I mean is they just have this nebulous idea of I want a healthy staff. Well, what happens is if you don't define what that is, then it's like what's happening is you're shooting, and then later you're determining whether or not you hit the target. So here's what we say at the Bridge, and let me just encourage every pastor or church leader who listens to this. What we say at the Bridge is that the culture we create is more important than the vision that we cast. I could defend this. What I mean by that is that you can have the most compelling vision statement in the world. When you say your vision statement, it just jacks everybody mm-hmm. up, and they want to sell everything and come do it with you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have an unhealthy culture, then people will leave in 1 month or get hurt by staying.
Yeah.
On the mm-hmm. other hand, because we've proven this, you can have the worst imaginable vision statement, like one that literally is repulsive to people. That's what we did. But if you have an amazing culture where when people there, they leave and they say things like, man, just being here is like a breath of fresh air, or it just feels right, or, you know, it's just refresh. They're not, they don't know what to say, but what they're saying is this place has an amazing culture. And if you have that, then you will never be able to get people to stop being there.
Which you guys proved when you moved recently, and you had some rather severe parking issues, if I'm not mistaken.
We've always, and let me just say that. So
I mean, you whined about this a lot on Facebook.
Absolutely. Because it's a problem, and it's an expensive problem.
But
to prove this, and listen, you know, I'm just speaking from a human perspective and numerically, just to put some handles around this. But listen, to encourage every church leader, you don't have to have the $2 million AVL set up to have something that is incredibly attractive to people. The thing that is the most attractive thing a church can have is free. And that's an amazing gospel culture. So when I feel like when we establish that, you know, we were in the worst imaginable situation. We were in the back of a warehouse where no one could see us. There was no parking.
If you've ever been concerned about your location, folks who are listening,
ours was worse.
It was really bad.
Ours was worse.
It was.
And we broke every rule. Church planters, you know, books tell you don't break in having a location that you're set up.
So yeah, we were cramming over 1,000 people into 8,000 total square feet and 300 seats. And then when we relocated, you know, it's the same thing. Right now we're about 5 services right now. We're running 5 services on a Sunday in that building. And listen, there's a lot of other things go into that. We think that the biggest thing from a human perspective is having an amazing gospel culture.
And the parking was funny in a sense because people weren't mad about the parking. They were frustrated because it was making it hard for them to get to a place they really wanted to be.
Yes.
Yep.
It wasn't that they were mad at anybody.
Right.
They wanted to be at church. They wanted to be at the bridge for the services and experience what God had for them, and they were having a tougher time getting there because of the parking.
So they
situation.
Put up with chaos because of the culture.
Yes,
and they
were
willing to do that.
Rather than having a good time and then having chaos for a culture.
Yes.
Can I tell a quick story and then let Matt describe? You initially asked about those staff behaviors.
Yes.
Let me tell a quick story about it, and then maybe Matt can like just go, here's what they are.
Maybe he can.
Maybe he can.
We'll see.
Maybe he can. Yeah, so just to put a face on this, we have an elder whose mom is not a Christian, and she lives out of town.
Okay.
And a couple of years ago, actually it was about a year and a half ago, they got a text from her after our 11 o'clock service where she just texted her son and said, hey, that was an amazing service today. And they were like, Mom, were you at the bridge? And she said, yeah, you know. And they went nuts. They were like, you drove in from out of town without telling us, you know. And they just said, hey, Mom, why did you come? And listen, this was her response. She said, I just wanted to be in a room with that many people who were that excited to be there.
Wow.
That's a non-Christian person.
Yeah.
That's the power of an amazing and compelling culture. So here's how you establish it, and then I'll let Matt kind of run through. Here's our staff behaviors. The only way to establish a culture is to recruit to your values and then remove people who consistently embody an anti-value.
Say it again for those in the back.
That's important. That's the most important thing we may say in the whole podcast, is when it comes to choosing and elevating and sustaining who stays, who gets into leadership and who stays, do not recruit to talent. That's the biggest mistake anyone can ever make.
And we made that.
We made that mistake many times. Do not recruit to talent. Recruit to values. And then you have to be willing to remove anyone who consistently embodies an anti-value. So to give you guys an example of what the values are, Matt, do you want to run them through what those staff behaviors are?
Yeah, so we have what we just call 7 leadership behaviors. And this is, we used to call them staff behaviors because it was geared towards staff. Then we realized if we really want to push the culture down, these are leadership behaviors for people in every area of our church, no matter what ministry team. If you're on a team, we wanted them to know these behaviors and have this culture pushed down from the top to the very bottom. So the 7 is the first one, and this is one of the harder ones to define. But the first one is just attractive spirituality. It's just a type of spirituality that doesn't feel fake, doesn't feel forced. There can be a joy, and there can be a joy in sorrow, you know. But just a type of spirituality where Lost people want to know you.
Yeah.
And so that's obviously number one for us. The second one, the one I can't believe I forgot earlier, is laugh loud, hard, and often. And that kind of speaks to that culture we talked about, how we established that early. And if we have we have to have a team where we can laugh together, we can and just enjoy each other. Nobody wants to go to work and not enjoy the people they're around.
Right.
And nobody wants to serve on a ministry team with people that they don't enjoy, you know, being around.
Right.
And so that one, that's been huge. The next one is hone your craft. This one is it's like our pace setter one. Mm-hmm. It's a keystone. We feel like if everyone's trying to hone their craft, they're actually going to grow and get better in every area,
right,
not just the one thing they're aiming for. And that's been huge. You know, like we said, we were all in our 20s when we started. Mm-hmm. We had no idea what we're doing, and we still don't have any idea what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Now we know what we were doing if our church was still 300 people. Mm-hmm. But where we're at now, the only way that we grow is by we hone our craft and are always looking to learn mm-hmm. from anybody we can learn from at any time from anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's what it gives us, just the ability to not have everything fall apart on a weekly basis on us. Next one is we just say honor up, down, and all around. We really got that from a article written by Ray Ortland, where he talks about the only commandment in the Bible that tells us to be competitive with one another mm-hmm. is to outdo one another in showing honor.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and so cool. We say honor up, down, and all around because mm-hmm. We don't want to just honor up. Mm-hmm. We want to show honor to every single person around us.
That's awesome.
And so that makes sure like gossip doesn't happen, sarcastic put downs mm-hmm. and jabs.
Yep.
That is largely accepted, mm-hmm. Even in Christian circles, mm-hmm. That it doesn't have a place on our team. We want mm-hmm. people to feel safe and encouraged when they walk on our teams. And then the next one we just have reject good for great. For us, this is primarily stewardship. You know, we don't ever want to just settle and honestly kind of be lazy. Of, oh, man, this is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
We want to reject that and say, no, how can we make this thing great? And yep. we apply that to everything. And then the last one is whatever it takes. We just want to make sure everybody on our team has that mentality of, man, we always say nobody can say that's not my job. We all yep. embody a whatever it takes of, man, if this is going mm-hmm. to help the church reach people and disciple people, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. And we had a new guy on staff a few years ago, and his first Sunday, we found him with a plunger in the bathroom, plunging the bathroom. And we were like, no, you don't have to do this. But he just already had a whatever it takes mentality.
Right.
Yeah, that was literally what he said. I said, hey, man, that's not your job. You don't have to do this. He said, hey, man, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And we thought, that's a leadership behavior.
Yeah, he spoke the behavior before we had defined it.
Yeah.
So did you
there's one more. Huh? Oh, wait, did you want to click on that one?
And the last one, yep. And the last one, sorry, I did skip one.
Believe for the bridge.
Okay. Yep.
And so that's really important.
Yeah, it's really important. That's a big one that we talk about. You know, Craig Rochelle always says, you got to make sure you have people who have organizational drive over mm-hmm. personal ambition. Mm-hmm. And that's what that one speaks to is, man, do we have a staff who are willing to make a decision that might hurt them, but that's good for the church?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so we make sure, man, everybody on our team, they're willing to make that decision
yep.
of, man, it's not good for me or my area.
Mm-hmm.
It's best for the church. And so making sure, no, we're hiring and we're recruiting to, even volunteers who, man, if they're in a ministry area and it's just not their thing, mm-hmm. they might have thought it was their thing, but that is not their giftedness.
Right.
That when you have that value, you're able to say to that person, man, what would you think about stop doing this that you love and that you've done a long time
mm-hmm.
And consider this over here. I really think it better fits, you know, your gift set.
So these are seven values that exist for your staff, but they're, I won't say pushed out, they flow out to your volunteer teams?
Yeah, it's the same thing. Whenever I mean, we're to a size right now where the church can't function in a healthy way without there being incredibly high levels of volunteer leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's the thing I said earlier where it's not just staff with any leadership role.
Mm-hmm.
It's hey man, we got to how to create a healthy culture, recruit to values,
mm-hmm.
and remove anyone who stubbornly embodies an anti-value. So with mm-hmm. any volunteer leader, the first question we're not first asking, how good are they at kids ministry?
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're not asking, how talented are they at leading worship?
Mm-hmm.
That's the second question.
Yeah.
The first question is, how well are they embodying all seven of our staff behaviors? Mm-hmm. And here's what every church will find. In fact, if you're listening to this, give yourself a little test right now And you're going to find out this is true in your context. Your culture is going to become whatever is the worst behavior you consistently allow.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so if you even have one person in influential leadership who you consistently allow to gossip mm-hmm. or to sarcastically put down and dishonor people around them, and you as a leader let that go unchecked,
mm-hmm.
that becomes your culture. And all it takes is one, because in the words of my uncle, all it takes is one turd to stink up a room. Come on, somebody. That's all it takes.
Yes.
So even on a staff of 32 people,
yep.
we know if we just have one guy who can stubbornly embodies an anti-value, that one person ruins the culture.
Yeah, and it's the same thing of if it's just volunteers on mm-hmm. a ministry team. You have your staff member trying to lead their group of leaders. It can be for their small groups. And they have their 15 leaders, mm-hmm. and there's one person who is just, you know, always negative and always, if they're condescending toward, you know, yep. whatever yep. they embody,
mm-hmm.
That's going to ruin that entire team yes. dynamic.
Yes.
Just having that one of 15, even if they're just a volunteer.
So talk for just a second about when you have the person who refuses to embody the values and you have to do a removal of some sort. What's yeah. the process that you guys go through before you finally pull the plug on someone?
Yeah, let me give a decision-making grid that speaks to that. I think every leader needs this grid. Is if I were on a whiteboard in front of you, I would write three things on the board. At the very top, I would write Jesus. Right under Jesus, I would write the church. Mm-hmm. And right under the church, I would write the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And that's any leader, church leader's order of priorities in any decision. Mm-hmm. First, is this a sin? Does this dishonor Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
Second, if the answer is no, then my second priority is the good of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And then my third priority is the good of the individual. So for instance, you may listen to this podcast, you may go, man, remove somebody who embodies an anti-value? That sounds mean. Well, what I would say is no. What's mean is, I'll just speak to our context with our numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say, no. What's mean is allowing 3,000 people to be hurt
mm-hmm.
for the sake of one person not being hurt.
Yeah.
That's mean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, man, we just have to do that. We just have to say, what's best for the whole church? Removing somebody who consistently embodies an anti-value is what's best for the whole church. And then last, what I'd say is, whenever you discover you have to do a harsh thing, do it in the gentlest way.
Yes.
Do it in the gentlest way. So find a way to graciously help that person understand what's happening and do it.
Yeah, and I would just say part of that is, and this is one thing Josh has been phenomenal at from the beginning. It actually caught me off guard. I'd say probably Craig too if he was here, is how above and beyond Josh would go to make sure that person knew, man, mm-hmm. we care for you and mm-hmm. we love you.
Mm-hmm.
There are times, you know, it's kind of easy, like, oh, this person's just negative. Just, you know,
right.
you kind of brush them off. Josh Nett would never do that, and he would never allow us to do
mm-hmm.
that. And so part of that, I think that's part of us embodying attractive spirituality is, mm-hmm. and even
yep.
when we have to say a hard thing, they ought to know and feel. We mm-hmm. really love them and care for them and are willing to go above and beyond for them. And hopefully, you know, when you're talking about your leadership behaviors consistently, they're not hearing something for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
You've done a bad job as a leader if the first conversation you had in removing them
right.
is, you know, you're doing a really bad job. So it should be, you know, there's several conversations leading up to that, just applying the leadership behaviors that have already clearly been established
mm-hmm.
as our unifying values.
Can I give two case studies to help a listener know what this looks like?
Maybe.
You tell me.
Yes,
Southern
you can.
Batman. Okay, well, let's do this. Okay, two case studies, and I'll just remain pretty vague. So, for instance, here's how important this is to us. There was one time where we made a mistake in hiring.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, I'm going to say we were the ones who made the bigger mistake because we should have helped ourselves and this person identify that there wasn't a culture fit on the front end.
Mm-hmm.
And we hired somebody, and we realized in the first month, oh my goodness,
yeah.
There's not a culture match. And it's not that there was a sin issue on this person's heart. I think that there was an alignment issue,
mm-hmm.
and we realized that. And this person was honest with us to say, this is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to make the decision to remove somebody from staff after them only being on staff for 6 weeks.
Wow.
Now, we gave them a very, very generous severance package, mm-hmm. and I did whatever I could to help them find their next position.
Sure.
That's an example of when you have to do a harsh thing, do it in the gentlest way.
Mm-hmm.
That's one case study. Let me give another one. We said earlier, recruit to values, not to talent.
Mm-hmm.
3 years ago, we had a very, very talented worship team member who really struggled with how we were leading and decisions we were making mm-hmm. as the church was growing. And we knew that this person was voicing those frustrations to other team members behind closed doors.
Right.
Extremely talented, extremely high-profile leader in our church that was a volunteer. And we had to say to this person, we are so sorry. We need to give you and us some time to make sure that you are called not just to the church in general, but mm-hmm. to this church in specific.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, we need to ask you to stop leading worship until you can bleed for the bridge.
Mm-hmm. My guests today on Pastor Talk have been Josh Howerton and Matt Swoboda from the Bridge Church in Spring Hill, Tennessee. We've been talking about healthy staff environments. So you guys are on Twitter.
We've been known to tweet.
Been known to tweet. Do you still have a separate sports
Twitter?
I don't
know if you want to
I do have a separate
that.
Sports Twitter so that all of my immaturity is not displayed in the largest possible setting.
That's more evidence that he's wiser
is
than
it
I just, am.
Is it at Josh Howerton?
No, my Twitter handle is at Howerton Josh, okay. No spaces.
Okay.
Howertonjosh at Howerton Josh.
And Matt?
Is Matt, I think it's underscore.
It
might be two underscores. I think it's one.
That's not confusing at all.
Swoboda, S-V-O-B-O-D-A.
And that's was there another it. Matt Swoboda? Is that why you
Bro,
put
there's
an
a lot.
Underscore?
There's
really?
A lot. Yeah, yeah. I'm on Facebook. I'm Matt.Swoboda9.
Swoboda is the Smith of Nebraska.
That's
They're
amazing.
Everywhere.
It's, it means freedom. It's Czech. And okay. It's extremely popular in Eastern Europe.
Freedom is popular in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, super popular. But there's a lot more Swobodas than people think. It's just in the South. They're really not amazing there. Yeah.
And I think I told you that I knew a lady when she saw that you and I were friends. She messaged me to find out. That's fine.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining me, guys. And we're about to go into another episode. So if you're listening, we're going to be with Matt and Josh again here in just a moment, or actually as you're hearing it next week, for part two of a conversation that has to do with starting a church. And even if you're a small church pastor, a small church leader, you want to listen to this because they were a small church when they started planning this, mm-hmm. or much smaller than they are now. And it's a really, really great story that you'll want to hear. So until next time, this is Marty Durham for Pastor Talk.
Pastor Talk is the podcast of Lifeway Pastors and is hosted by Marty Durham. That's me. Join us each week as I interview pastors, authors, professors, and others to help your ministry as you seek to shepherd your flock well. Until next time, this is Marty Durham.